uncensored, no holds barred talk. 24 hours a day, 7 days a week. This is the Global Reality Radio Network.
Welcome to another live edition of the Global Reality right here on the Global Reality Radio Network. I'm your host, Josh Reeves. Thank you for being with us tonight for this Thursday into Friday Moonbat edition of the show. Glad you could be with us. And we're going to be getting into some news and information for you tonight, as per usual. And anything that you'd like to discuss as well via email. And the email address, again, is globalrealityshow@gmail.com. That's globalrealityshow@gmail.com. And go ahead and send over anything over there tonight you have in the way of topics, suggestions, or comments, anything else. And I will do my best to address it here tonight on the show. Not a lot so far. Maybe I got one or two here. I don't have to see. But yeah, should be interesting nonetheless. We have some news here tonight, actually, that we need to get into and discuss. So we'll do that without further ado here in just a bit. And that's what we'll start the show out tonight. And then we will come back after we get through all tonight's news. And we will be continuing in our reading. We're picking up tonight on chapter 14 and William Bramley's book, The Gods of Eden. And we will have Mr. Bramley joining us on the program in the coming month in April, somewhere, I think around the 18th or something like that, I think was when we're going to have him on. Looks like we're going to be having William Henry on the show as well. And I would probably also be contacting Ralph Epperson about getting him on the show as well. So should be having some power-packed guests coming up in the near future for you here on the Global Reality. So hope you'll continue to tell people about the show. Thanks to everybody out there who continues to make the videos and get those up for everybody's enjoyment. And I think that's been helping quite a bit in getting the shows out there to a lot more people. Because, you know, when you cut something down into an easy-to-digest YouTube video with a nice title on it that sums up what it's about, you sometimes have the ability to grab a hold of people a lot quicker than you can. Some people don't have the patience to sit through 2 hours of my show like you do. You know, you can sometimes get them with, you know, that people like everything in the easy to digest sound bites, you know that. So, yeah, there you go. There's that. And, my website again is theglobalreality.com. It's www.theglobalreality.com. That's where this broadcast originates from. And there's lots of stuff up there. We, one of the things that, we do here to get the word out as well, we have a band called the Demigods. I'm the drummer in that, with my sister, Jamie Reeves, and Delphi as well. And, we have our EP that's up for sale on the website under music CDs. You can get Delphi solo albums there, and Jamie's solo albums is where as well there. And I'm going to be putting out a separate soundtrack disc. It's going to be out under the FML imprint, and so that'll add to that collection too. Once the Seawright Volume 2 is out, I'm going to be coming up with it's going to have a separate soundtrack disc. And so everybody that pre-ordered and all that stuff will get that for free with their order. So, but that's going to be up there as well. But that's another thing you can check out. We have all the different video clips that have been taken from audio clips of the show. That's something up there you can check out. All the documentaries I've ever made and all the little movie clips and stuff. Reality of Illusion series, part 1 through 4. Yes, somebody has sent me emails recently saying, is there going to be more Reality of Illusion films? Yes, there will be more. I generally try to make those. The reason I started making those was one reason. I decided to make a series of small films and put them out on YouTube on topics as they became important to me, or, you know, new research and stuff. That way I could make a small little film, put it out there with the hopes that in the end, eventually there will be enough of these made and I'm going to eventually compile them all into one proper movie and put that out as well. So that's up there. And all my stuff is up there that you can check out. You can buy copies. If you click on under documentaries, in case some people don't know this, because it's kind of hard to tell. The links under the documentary tab on the website for the individual films, for specifically for The Secret Right, Volume 1, and for 9/11 New World Rising, if you click on those under the documentary tab, it takes you to another page. And the other page it takes you to is an embedded video where you can watch it. And then if you scroll down underneath the embedded video, you will find the Buy Now button for those particular films. So that's where you find where to buy those films at. Somebody else had sent me an email saying they didn't know where they could see to buy it, but then they never ended up buying anything. So maybe that was for naught. Maybe they couldn't find it. But if you couldn't find it anyway, there it is. All the radio show archives there, theglobalreality.com. We also have the Chip and Banner and the donate button there to support our work. And this was our fundraising week. Someone helped us finish off our Chip and Banner on Monday, so we get all the bills paid tomorrow. And but we do, we know when we pay all the bills at the end of the month, we're kind of short there around the first of the month. So please donate if you can, and help support our work and keep it pushing forward into the future, because we have a lot to do. We have a long way to go and a short time to get there. In the name of Smokey and the Bandit, amen. Amun-Ra. I got to start out with this one tonight. This is because this is Moonbatty, and this is a Moonbat show, and this is a moon. This is from a Moonbat fucking CIA front website. Any of these India Daily and Daily India and Pakistan Daily and Daily Pakistan, folks, these are CIA disinfo newspapers. They are set up to spread disinfo. You'll see anything you see from Sorcha Fall or the EU Times. That's another one that's full of disinfo. I saw this one making the rounds today in the conspiratorial website genre. So I need to address it and address it as the propaganda I believe it is. But then again, what do I know? Monkeys might fly out of my butt too, and this could be true. So, but I'll read it. UFOs expected at royal wedding, says retired Air Force major. A former Air Force major has said that the royal wedding is not only expected to be viewed by over a billion people around the world, but also by a few UFOs. Former military officer George Flyer runs the National UFO Center and says it's common to see the extraterrestrials at around important events, and it's highly possible they may be watching the royal wedding, too. The craft seem to have an interest in anything important. They've been sighted recently over Libya and near the Japanese tsunami. That's true. There has been videos come out of that. He says UFO Center tracks over 1,000 sightings each month and has been getting reports from British Royal Air Force pilots over the past few weeks who reported seeing UFOs over the English Channel. Flyer is also expecting sightings around Westminster Abbey on April 29th because he says the royal family have shown interest in UFOs. Well, what's to say they won't just concoct some shit on their computer with some special effects and put it out there with a CNN logo on it or something and say it's official and use this as a part of the plan to further the propaganda about the existence of extraterrestrials. Because they are going to come out and tell us that extraterrestrials are real. The problem is they're going to tell us they're hostile when they're not. Even Wernher von Braun, that was his admission. Ex-head of the Nazi space program brought over to the United States during Project Paperclip to head up NASA. I mean, he told Carol Rosen in the days before his death when he was dying of cancer in the 1970s, at first the threat would be communism, and then it would be terrorism, and then it would be third world crazies, and then asteroids, and then they would tell us that hostile extraterrestrials want to destroy our way of life, and so we have to arm space and weaponize space against them. Pretty accurate thing there. That's my question. Now, I'm sure there's going to be some YouTube videos that are going to come up. They're going to pop out, and it's going to be there. But this is Daily India, India Daily, all these websites. These are known CIA propaganda fronts. So, again, be aware of patsies. Be aware of Fall Guys. Be aware of the blame game, assigning blame somewhere. These people will do anything and everything to assign blame to something other than themselves and the continuation of the agenda. And that's what all world events, that's what everything in their system is all about, furthering and continuing the agenda into the future. So I definitely see this as a part of that, and I definitely see the fact that they're going to try and tell us that they're hostile extraterrestrials. It's just, it's there in the cards. But let's see what else we have here tonight. And of course, we our favorite buddy, yours and mine. Oh yes, you love him. You know he's a real truth teller. He's a real man of God.
Yes. Please welcome. I'd like to welcome Mr. Harold Campen to the show tonight. Mr. Campen, tell me right now, when's the world going to end? Because Hagen needs to know so Hagen can make his way out with all the Jew gold before it happens. Pastor Hagen is here to make off with the gold. You better believe it.
Mm-hmm. U.S. preacher warns end of the world is now. May 21st, around 6 p.m. to be precise. Well, that's fucking great. I mean, I gotta tip my hat to this clown Harold Camping here for a minute because, you know, shit. I know May 21st rolls around. I'll be looking at my, well, let me see what day of the week that is. May 21st. What day of the week it is? Is that it's a Saturday. Oh, well, shit. The world's going to end on a Saturday. Fuck, well, I probably won't roll out of bed till 12:31 anyway, because I probably partied it up a little bit the night before, considering it would have been a Friday. So probably I'm going to roll out of bed probably 12:30, 1 o'clock. Probably be fucking hungry. Some probably need something to eat. I'll probably hang out for a little bit. Maybe I'll watch something and then, okay, well, I just want to make sure I got my schedule right. So I want to make sure I get everything done that day before 6, you know what I mean? I mean, I don't want to be sitting over here with a handful of, you know, jerkins or something. It'd be 5:58 and I'm going, oh, fuck. You know what I mean? So I appreciate that. I appreciate them nailing that down to a specific time there. So, I mean, you get that rarely, you know, you really do. I mean, you get a lot of, you know, doomsdayers and you get a lot of doom and gloomers and the rest of it. But I tell you what, man, you very rarely get one that will tell you to the minute, to the time of day, exactly what time it is. I mean, I think everybody needs to know how much time they have to jerk off before this happens. I mean, it's really the most important thing on my list. Got to be honest with you. You know, show's about truth, so I got to be 100% real at all times. And, you know, it doesn't get any more real than that, if you ask me. So thank you, Mr. Camping, for allowing us to know exactly when this is going to happen. And, 6 o'clock's prime time, baby. Must-see TV. Turn it on. All right, what's happening? Oh, shit. Is that a horned guy coming out of the ground with lava? Oh, fuck. God damn, it's fucking 6:01, isn't it? Shit. The end of the world is now. May 21st, to be precise. That's the date when Harold Camping, a preacher from Oakland, California, is confidently predicting the second coming of the Lord. At about 6 p.m., he reckons 2% of the world's population will be immediately raptured to heaven.
The rest of us will get sent straight to the other place. And you know where that is.
If Mr. Campy were speaking from any normal pulpit, it would be easy to dismiss him as just another religious eccentric wrongly calling the apocalypse. But thanks to this elderly man's ubiquity on America's airwaves and billboards, his unlikely doomsday message is almost impossible to ignore. Every day, Mr. Campy, an 89-year-old former civil engineer, speaks to his followers via the Family Radio Network, a religious broadcasting organization funded entirely by donations from listeners. Such is their generosity that his assets total $120 million. Jesus Christ. And that his network now owns 66 stations in the U.S. alone. Those deep pockets were raided to allow Family Radio to launch a high-profile advertising campaign proclaiming the approaching day of judgment. More than 2,000 billboards across the U.S. are adorned with slogans, which include "Blow the trumpet, warn the people." I've seen these. They're in Dallas. A fleet of logoed camper vans is touring every state in the nation. It's getting real close. It's getting pretty awesome when you think about it, Mr. Camping told the Independent. Oh, these fuckers love this shit. Oh, it's great. It's awesome. When you think about it, it's pretty awesome. It's getting close. I can't wait. We're not talking about a ball game or a marriage or graduating from college. We're talking about the end of the world, a matter of being eternally dead or being eternally alive, and it's all coming to a head right now. God, watch them launch some sort of, you know, Project Bluebeam. Yeah. Except the ones that get raptured out go straight to the meat grinder we're going up to heaven, we're raptured out. Yeah, right. You know, you're not. You're going into a big vacuum cleaner the United States Air Force made from back-engineered alien technology that's going to suck you up off the ground like a vacuum cleaner, take you up. You're going, oh, we're in an alien ship. Oh, my God, we must be going to heaven. No, you're going to the fucking meat grinder. Yeah, all you believers, all you Bible believers, all you people that actually believe that horse shit, didn't do your research, didn't find out what the Bible was really saying, guess what? You're dying first, bitches. Oh, eternal life? You thought you were going to heaven? Well, if heaven is a meat grinder, baby, you're going there. Ha ha. Solid greed for everybody. Let's eat. It would probably stand a reason. It would probably be something like that, doesn't it? I mean, my God. I mean, you can almost really see it going down like that. Recent earthquakes such as in Japan, New Zealand, and Haiti are harbingers of impending doom, he says, as are changing social values. All the stealing and the lying and the wickedness. If you're reading a preacher, you have to read like this, by God. It's just a rule. It's the only way you can teach from the pulpit the word of God. And that's G-A-W-D, by the way. God. All the stealing, all the lies. I can't even read it. Well, I have to read it like this. Like I'm on the pulpit. Yes, in another life, I believe I may have been a preacher. It's so much fun. It's kind of like every time I imitate Ted Turner, I always, it automatically becomes Foghorn Leghorn. I said right now what we're going to do is get into some eugenics. It's kind of the same voice. Mr. Camping, who founded Family Radio in the 1950s, grew up Baptist. No, surely not. Well, this is great stuff, though. I don't know. May 20, it is interesting to me that's the same time they're running the national level exercise 2011. FEMA, Department of Homeland Security, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. Running this massive drill for the event of a gigantic earthquake happening along the New Madrid fault line. Yeah, national level, NLE 2011. Google that. NLE 2011, National Level Exercise 2011. And find out when they're launching that, May 21st. So I think those correlations between that are interesting. Probably... done is for the chill factor effect to get people, worried this is going to happen. Because again, you know, we can have clues and we can have speculation, but if you think back to 9/11, if you think back to the time right around September 11th, one of the things that was such a shock to most people, but regardless of what your existing paradigm was at that time, for me, there were elements that I believed at first and other elements I didn't believe. Like initially when the planes or whatever that was, leave that up to you to decide if there were planes or no planes or anything else. I'm not here to make that decision for you. And I'm not going to fucking criticize you whether you make a decision either way. Because I think anybody that does, it should be questioned. Sorry, I have to say it. Anybody who, you know, chattel somebody else who believes the official story of 9/11 is a fraud on the finer points of whether or not it was planes, no planes, or anything else. It's just, they have to have an agenda because nobody knows for sure. And either one is, you know, if somebody believes they have enough evidence to believe one way or the other, then let them believe that until something else better comes up. But this, you know, dogmatic view of thermite and planes and all this stuff, and also the dogmatic view of the people that believe space beams and that, either way, either one of those is wrong. You know, it's an open discussion. Let's not child each other over who's right or who's wrong, but simply present the information and allow the people to decide for themselves what's right or wrong. But my point is that when that happened, the idea of flying quote-unquote airplanes into buildings seemed like something that was unthinkable. Like no one ever thought of that. Like, oh shit. You know what I mean? And a lot of people had that reaction, kind of like, oh, you know, I never would have thought they would have thought to do, you know, they would have done that. Never thought we'd see airplanes, you know, flying into buildings on a quote unquote terrorist attack, you know, on live TV in downtown New York. So I've kind of been thinking that it might be important right now for us to start thinking about things that may seem like the unthinkable. You know what I mean? As far as staging terror attacks and staging these things. I've been thinking about this a lot lately, and I saw this article today from the Daily Mail. And as soon as I saw this article, I started thinking, well, wow, maybe this is what I was thinking. Maybe this could be it. I started thinking about the possibility of using the space program, the space shuttles. We know that allegedly the two space shuttle tragedies we had were actually caused by particle beam weaponry and space-based weapons having a false positive and thinking that they were alien ships or extraterrestrial ships and blowing them out of the sky. So I've thought for a while the possibility of using something like, you know, claiming that Chinese hackers or, you know, Al-Qaeda, cracker Al-Qaeda hackers or whatever it is, white Al-Qaeda, white jihadists or whatever, or hackers, you know, Russian hackers or Chinese hackers, hack into NASA, gain control of one of their spacecraft, and then inadvertently steer it out of orbit into Earth as basically like a weapon. And I started thinking, well, you know, since they have the X-37B up there and they have these gravity bomb things, the, what do they call them? The rods of God or something like that, or rod of the gods. It's what they used to blow up the moon with in 2009. I know it sounds ridiculous, but they did. They blew up the moon. And it was a thing that goes in orbit and can orbit. It's the X-37B is what it is. And it goes in orbit over anything. And then it uses inertia and gravity to come to Earth, and it can leave the, it makes an explosion, basically levels an area the size of multiple nuclear weapons, multiple nuclear bombs, without leaving any radioactive fallout. And I said, well, since it's against all laws and treaties and everything worldwide for there to be these kind of offensive space-based weapons up there, yet we know they already tested this on the moon, and we know that they now have it up there in orbit around the Earth right now, then they could use this weapon and then create a cover story that hackers took one of their aircraft out of orbit and flew it into a city using a spacecraft as a weapon, much in the way that they used an airplane or whatever it was as a weapon on 9/11, and crashing that into a city, creating a nuclear-sized explosion, but without leaving any radioactive fallout. So then I was thinking that, and then I saw this article. NASA computers that control spacecraft vulnerable to crippling hacker attacks. And I went, my God, that's exactly, synchronicity yet again is exactly what I was thinking. You would hope the space agency, so famous for its high-end computer technology, might at least be able to keep their systems secure from hackers. But IT security is so bad at NASA that its computer network is vulnerable to incidents that could have a catastrophic or crippling effect on the agency, and a report said. NASA Inspector General Paul Martin said computer services on its mission network that control spacecraft in orbit have high-risk vulnerabilities exploitable from the internet. Now, this is such bullshit. Does anybody in the right mind believe that NASA and the DOD and the Pentagon and the Secret Service and all the rest of the shit actually has their computers on the World Wide Web? Give me a fucking break, dude. That's where the internet came from. And the ARPANET, the DARPANET, the Infranet. These groups have internal computer systems and networks that operate just between them and don't go on any outside systems. That's where they keep critical data at. And they think that the average person and the average people out there don't know that, but it's a fact. And I was just talking about this tonight, and there it is again right there, where they are straight up lying to you. Cyber attackers who hack into the network could use computers to exploit other weaknesses and severely degrade or cripple NASA's operations. That's a hoax. That is an absolute hoax. There's no way they can do that. all the stuff that controls spacecraft and controls satellites and all that is not just on some big mainframe that's plugged into the, you know, Goyim World Wide Web or whatever they want to fucking call it. You know, the mainstream World Wide Web. I mean, the hubris of believing that we don't know that. Mr. Martin said, we found that computer servers on NASA's agency-wide mission network had high-risk vulnerabilities that were exploitable from the internet. There is no way in hell they have the mission network computers. No. And even if, let's just say for a minute, we saw proof that they do have them on the internet, then that's proof right there they've set this up to happen. Because internal computer systems like that do not go on the World Wide Web. I've worked in the computer industry. I did before 9/11. I had a fucking fat job, dude. I was working in for Intuit, for TurboTax. I was the head of their Mac department for support in Dallas. And there's a few things in there that I didn't get credit for that I created that they put into the program that's still in there to this day. Yeah. I don't get any money for that. I never got an extra bonus or anything for that. It was little things that I made and I told them about that I said they should do that they do. I don't get credit for that. That's how it works. But I know for a fact these systems are on internal infranets, infrastructure nets that are not connected to any of this stuff. It's ridiculous. This is such lies. Specifically, six computer servers associated with IT assets that control spacecraft. Again, spacecraft controlling computers are not on the... You can't surf fucking Facebook on fucking NASA mission control computers, retards. Wouldn't that be great? And here's NASA getting ready to launch the last space shuttle flight. Let's take a look at mission control and see what's going on. Da, 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 da. They're going like through mission control. And here's Bob's over here, you know. Hitting like on somebody's status. Oh, something purple just came out of the head of my penis. Oh, well, I like that. Let me hit like. Yes, yes. Like. I mean, it's just so retarded that they think we believe this. Where did it go? There it is. He found network servers had revealed encryption keys, encryption passwords, and user account information to potential attackers. NASA is vulnerable to computer incidents that could have a severe to catastrophic effect on agency assets, operations, and personnel until deficiencies are improved. The audit performed after NASA was hacked in cyber intrusions that resulted in theft of export controlled and other sensitive data from its mission computer networks. So this is, you know, they're talking about getting hackers and terrorists gaining control of, you know, spacecraft and all this stuff. But that very well could be a scenario they played out in the future. You know, they hacked us and they flew our aircraft into a city and it, you know, leveled the entire city. Oh, my God. But really, we used the X-37B to do that and just told you it was these hackers. And so now we're going to shut down the existing internet, bring in internet too. And ha-ha, there's our perfect pretext. You'll never figure it out. Because you didn't know we had the X-37B in orbit around the planet, which is a gravity bomb, because you don't read the papers, you don't pay attention to news, you're too busy watching Dancing with the Stars or anything else. You don't care. And I couldn't possibly be right about this, because what do I know, right? I would keep it in mind. That's all I'm saying. I would keep it in mind. This is, I'd like to know the answer to this myself. Same planet, same view. So why do these Russian satellite images of Earth look so different to NASA's? That's a good question. This is from the Daily Mail as well. Space agencies use different data sets to bring visualization of reality to life. That sounds like hogwash. Apparently, and it's pretty obvious if you look at it, when you look at the Russian pictures of the... see here, I'm trying to... Oh, I'm on a stupid browser. It won't let me grab just the link of the picture. But if you look at the Russian pictures of Earth and you look at the American Reuters pictures of Earth, they look totally different. And it is not really a good explanation as to why. Clearly showing various land colors according to terrain and finally detailing the height and contours of mountains, they are incredibly beautiful to look at, but they are also unique and quite different to the images of our planet captured by numerous NASA missions over the years. These images were not taken by NASA, but by an orbiting Russian spacecraft, and the reason for the big difference in Earth's appearance can be attributed to a different method of interpreting data being beamed back. The weather satellite Electro-L sends images to ground control every 30 minutes, but it is capable of mailing images every 10 minutes. Launched in January aboard a Zenit rocket, it is currently 36,000 kilometers above the equator. But while the Electro-L's revealing shots of Earth may appear more accurate than NASA images, the U.S. Space Agency claims that they are not. Dr. Robert Simon from the NASA Earth Observatory, a Goddard Space Flight Center in Maryland, said the Russian images are neither better nor worse. Well, they look patently better. They have more detail. They don't look photoshopped and washed over. The NASA ones look treated. He told Gizmodo that these Electro-L images are a combination of visible and near-infrared wavelengths, so they show Earth in a way not visible to human eyes. Vegetation looks red, for example. They're not any better or worse than NASA images, but they show better things. Well, something's fishy about this. I mean, I'll drop a link to this in the chat room for you to check out. But they really are radically different from each other. It's very odd. It makes you wonder why it is. What are they trying to block out and make us not be able to see? I don't know. Hey, it seems that they found a way to help the unemployment in the United States now. Yeah, it seems like you found a quite a good solution for that. You guys heard about this? I bet people will be lining up around the fucking block to do this. Like fucking George Carlin talked about. All you had to do is give them some cash and some prizes. Motherfuckers would line up just to jump off into the fucking Grand Canyon, film it, put it on TV. Motherfuckers would be lining up to go do it. You mean I get to be on TV? I get cash and prizes? Okay, I'll do it. Wanted, U.S. workers for crippled Japan nuke plant. So now they want to take the unemployed of the United States and say, hey, you know what? We need some fucking meat for this grinder. We need some cannon fodder, motherfucker. Get in there. As foreign assignments go, this must be just about the most dangerous thing going. A U.S. recruiter is hiring nuclear power workers in the United States to help Japan gain control of the Sturgeon Fukushima Daiichi plant, which has been spewing radiation. The qualifications, skills gained in the nuclear industry, a passport, a family willing to let you go, and willingness to work in a radioactive zone. Well, this is just great. Oh, fuck it, man. I'll go over there and work in that shit. I don't give a fuck. What's it going to do? My hair going to fall out? I ain't got no hair anyway. My bald hair going to fall out? I've been shaving that shit since 85, man. Shit. Make it fuck me. I'm going over there. Hell, damn Japs. I ain't American. Them Japs can't take that radiation anyway. They done got that bomb dropped on them by us, America. Hell. Send me over there. Man, you know, Fukushima ain't going to do nothing to me. Shit, I'll go over there right now. How much you pay me? Yeah, hell yeah, I'll go do it for that. Shit. The rewards, higher than normal pay, and the challenge of solving a major crisis. Boy, they sell that shit, don't they? About 2 weeks ago, we told our managers to put together a wish list of anyone interested in going to Japan, said Joe Melanson, a recruiter and specialist at nuclear industry staffing from Bartlett Nuclear in Plymouth, Massachusetts, on Thursday. So far, the firm has already signed up some workers who will be flying to Japan on Sunday. See, they already got some fucking meat for the grinder, dude. Took about that quick. Oh, hell, they'll pay me. I don't give a fuck. I'm going to drink that damn Jap beer. I'm over there, too. I'm going to get fucked up in there and run around that power plant, man. Hell, yeah. Melanson said that there will also be less than 10 workers in the initial group. Others are expected to follow later. Plant owner Tokyo Electric Power has appealed to the nuclear industry outside of Japan for assistance as the crisis has spiraled beyond their control. On Thursday, the company said radiation levels in water found in tunnels under the plant was 10,000 times the normal level, and radioactive iodine-131 was found in groundwater near number one reactor of the complex. Melton and Bartlett Nuclear had been approached by subcontractors linked to the General Electric Hitachi Nuclear Joint Venture. GE designed the Fukushima reactors. So they're, yeah, meat for the grinder. There you go. Need a job? Don't give a fuck about dying? Want some cash? You can go to Japan and you can be a power plant worker. Hell, they'd probably be taking fucking anybody at this point. Let's go around and roll in there in that nuclear waste. Yeah,
it's good for you. A little meat on your bones.
Let's see what else we have here tonight. AT&T's secret fucking loophole. If you want out of an internet contract, just curse. AT&T responds and does not deny it. With telecom giant AT&T rolling out limitations and additional fees on how much information its internet users can access, it seems the company is bracing for an influx of anger. In a little notice contract tweak recently, AT&T customer service representatives have been empowered to cancel the contract of any customers who behave in an abusive manner towards them. In other words, when those top 2% of users get massive bandwidth bills at the end of May, and they call in with full bore nerd rage. Hey, my friend who was sending me the anagram, she's been doing some awesome anagrams. If you're listening, there's one for you right there. We should write that one down. Full bore, B-O-R-E, full bore nerd rage. Full bore nerd rage. I'd like to know what an anagram for that is. Thank you. AT&T will have an easy solution. Cut them off entirely and waive the cancellation fee. Oh, that's just great. That's great news for people. I don't have to worry about that shit because I don't have a phone or I don't use AT&T. But those of you that do, if you have AT&T, well, that's great news. I'm actually glad I have something positive to report to my audience for once. My goodness. So if you have AT&T and they start capping your bandwidth or they start charging you exorbitant fees, fuck it. Run, and you got a contract with them. You know, I can't break the contract, you know, blah, 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 a year, 2 years, whatever. Well, go get yourself a terabyte external hard drive. Plug that motherfucker into your computer. Go to Pirate Bay or one of the BitTorrent sites out there and just run that motherfucker like a goddamn racehorse. Just run it wide open. Just bandwidth hog, dude. Movies, DVDs, download bullshit you don't even want. You probably won't even watch. Roots 1 and 2, the complete series. The complete Sid and Marty Krofft collection. All Back to the Future movies, including that fucking horrible piece of shit where they were in the Old West. All of them. Just download. And then when you get a bill for hundreds of thousands of dollars of fucking bandwidth, call those motherfuckers up and call them everything, including a motherfucker. Raise hell, you'll feel great. You can get your rage out. You can the Illuminati, New World Order, own motherfuckers. And they will cut you off and waive your cancellation fee, and you'll be free to go on to another provider without having to pay for that extensive bandwidth bill. And you just wound up with a terabyte full of data. Congratulations. Merry Christmas. Happy New Year. Happy Kwanzaa. There you go. Wrap it up. Put a bow on it. Put it under the tree. It's done. It's ready to be served. Hell yes. See, we're an informative show here. We like to look out for the best interests of all our audience. Yes. We also like to give you any opportunity to yell, fuck you, to a customer service representative. Oh, man, you got to lie. This shit is out of control. Obama wins an anti-secrecy award and then accepts it in secrecy. I wouldn't expect any less, to be honest with you. Would not expect any less. I haven't heard about this. And with all of the end of the world, locust plagues, death, destruction, the rapture. Oh, my God. I can't believe I haven't heard people saying this is a sign of the rapture. Oh, it's true. Stink bug epidemic spreads as 33 U.S. states now report infiltrations of the smelly pest. Oh, my God, man. I remember the first time I squished one of those when I was a kid. Oh, they don't call them stank bugs for nothing. That ain't a stink bug. That's a stank bug. S-T-A-N-K. Stank. It don't just stink, it stank. It's an extra emphasis of stink. Few of us ever come to terms with the idea of bed bugs infesting their house and home, but now a new threat is on the rise, which is arguably worse. Stink bugs. Sightings of the brown marmonated stink bug have been reported in 33 states.
33 states. The stink bug has infested 33 states. Nothing Masonic there at all. Go back to sleep. 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 Sleep.
33 states so far this year, and a rise of 8 since fall alone. The pest appears to be spreading from its traditional home in the mid-Atlantic coast through America. The only areas to escape the epidemic are the Rockies and the Plains, but elsewhere, homeowners are finding thousands of the dime-sized creatures infesting their homes in beds and in sofas. God. And you can't smash them because they stank. I mean, they stank bad, dude. Like, oh my God. If you've never smelled a stink bug before, it is horrible. Oh, it's one of the worst smells. God damn, those things stink. Stink bugs are named after the smell they emit when they are squashed or crushed. Yeah. Like bed bugs, they do not transmit disease or not poisonous. So they do, however, bite you. Yeah, they'd be fucking hurt from what I hear. They eat your plants and vegetables and emit an appalling stench when they are squeezed that resembles decaying garbage. Oh, it's worse than decaying garbage. It's worse than poo. It's worse than diarrhea. It's worse than, you know, fucking, dry Olympia farts. I mean, you know, anything. Pick your poison, dude. Oh, God, it's bad. It's horrid. According to USA Today, the 8 states recently infected are Arizona, Iowa, Georgia, Michigan, Minnesota, Vermont, Washington, and Wisconsin. So watch out for the stink bugs up there, Jerome. Hailing originally from China, Japan, and Korea, each stink bug has the capacity to lay up to 30 eggs per nesting season. Those things are stanky, dude. Ugh. Fuck a stink bug. Want no part of that. Let's take a break now. I think we've done the news justice today. I don't think there's anything else I need to add to that tonight. So we're going to take a break, come back. And when we come back from this break, we're going to get into reading more of William Bramley's The Gods of Eden for you tonight, chapter 14, The Plagues of Justinian. So definitely brew yourself some coffee, get ready to come back and get into this chapter for you here tonight. Late night, super late night Moonbed edition of the Global Reality right here for you on the Global Reality Radio Network with me, your host, Josh Reeves. Stay with us. I didn't have a song pulled up quick enough that time. Sometimes it happens that way. Because that's how it works. I just scroll through something and find the first thing and play it, and I just couldn't get down, scrolled down fast enough, so I had to stop. I'm going to have to wait here for a minute. See what I can find random here. Random. Oh, come on. Why is it right when I'm looking for something I can't find it? You ever notice that? All right, folks, stay with us. We'll be back in a minute.
What we've got here is failure to communicate. Some men you just can't reach. So you get what we had here last week, which is the way he wants it. Well, he gets it. I don't like it.
Your women crying, look at your young men dying, the way they've always done before. Look at the hate we're breeding, look at the fear we're feeding.
said peace could last forever. And in my first memories, they shot Kennedy. I went numb when I learned to see. So I never fell for being there. We got the wall of deceit to remind us all that you can't trust freedom when it's not in your hands. When everybody's fighting for the promised land.
Civil about war anyway.
Back here with you on the Global Reality, right here on the Global Reality Radio Network. I'm your host, Josh Reeves. Thank you for being with us here tonight for this late night Moonbat edition of the broadcast. We're going to continue on here tonight with a reading from William Bramley's The Gods of Eden, Chapter 14, The Plagues of Justinian. We'll be getting that into that here in just a bit. But first tonight, we're going to get into the Global Reality email pile, get into that, and get through some stuff. Yeah, some very interesting things here that some people have sent in, so I'll go over that a little bit. Somebody had a couple of videos I found interesting that people posted this week that I watched. The Winged Beetle, about the whole Paul is Dead thing. I knew, you know, knew most of the stuff that was in that film already just from my years of research and stuff, but the stuff that I've put out and talked about in terms of the Tavistock Institute, the Beatles, and their whole creation of rock and roll as a way to cause the youth to be rebellious so they could create what became the 60s anti-war movement, which was also headed by the singers and all that stuff. Were all, you know, all their whole families were military ops and admirals and colonels in the U.S. military. It's one big operation that started with the Beatles and continued all the way through the 60s, and it was done by the Tavistock Institute. But that film does a great job at filling in the blanks and really proving to you, if you already know about the Tavistock Beatles thing and all the rest of that, that film does a great job. The Winged Beetle, check that one out. And the other one was brought to my attention by Illuminated Scam. And he is one of our chatters in the UK and listeners in the UK. And so big shout out to Illuminated Scam. And he's also a musician and does music and stuff. I'm hoping at some point he's going to give us some stuff so we can listen to it and maybe play it here on the network. But yeah, I mean, he's representing over there in the UK, in the Queensland, and he's over there representing for the Global Reality and making all these videos. But he had sent me a video called The Cygnus Mystery. My friend J-Mock had asked me if I'd seen it, and I had. And that was another interesting film that that I checked out and watched this week. So there you go. There's my report on that for you. Again, this was our fundraising week. We slid in and got the bills paid for the month, but we do need your support, because once we pay the bills, we're going to be kind of low on cash for the films and to get mine, all the rest of the stuff. So please donate at the website, theglobalreality.com. Use the donate button if you'd like. The chipping banner for the month of April, for the bills for that month. So just use the donate button if you'd like to make a contribution towards the films, towards our work, towards what we're doing here and trying to help us grow, and also with the music and everything else. Please do that. And we've had a couple of people that have been really keeping us alive, and those couple of people that have been making donations need help. So please help, act accordingly, folks. And thank you so much for your support. And for those of you who have donated, and everybody who got us through into another month, thank you so much. We love you. We couldn't do it without you. You're the reason we're here. Let's see what else we have here out of the email stack. And I mentioned earlier when I was reading that article that my friend who's been sending me these anagrams, had sent last night when we were reading out of William Bramley's The Gods of Eden. I'd made a joke about it. Was sort of a sly little poke, you know. I was hoping certain people would pick up on it, and I guess some people did, but I wasn't being serious. I was just making a joke about John turning, when he says John turned to see seven candlesticks, and I said, you know, what did he see, a menorah? Well, I was just joking around, but this person took that John turned to see seven candlesticks and started making the anagrams out of it. And we had talked the other night about the Bible having different, you know, being a coded language. And one of our listeners sent us a great email about that. And so when I saw this anagram from the words John turned to see seven candlesticks be made into a sentence that says he turned around to see Enki standing there. Enki was wounded and sick. Enki was half machine. And those three sentences there were created out of anagrams from the word John turned to see seven candlesticks. Isn't that a bit odd? And what was odd is right when this person was sending me these the other night, I was watching that Winged Beetle documentary, and they were talking about the anagrams with Paul's name and all the rest of stuff. And so I started looking at that and going, that just seems it just seems really strange and odd and very, very, I would think that would be too big of a coincidence. You know what I mean? I got to hand it to this person who's doing these anagrams. I don't know if she wants me to divulge her identity. I won't give her full name. I won't do that. I usually just, but this person, Allison, you're fucking awesome, man. And the fact that you could even do this, and she sent me some epic emails with anagrams. Oh, my goodness, dude, it's unbelievable. And I really wasn't ever paying much attention to this until I watched that Winged Beetle documentary. And then it sort of dawned on me. And then she started getting these emails right around the same time. And I was going, wow, this is just, and then one of them, another one she sent says Inky Vessel ACDC or bisexual orientation, which, I mean, isn't that odd? And just on and on and on here, taken in a vessel. John turned to see seven candlesticks is also an anagram for taken in a vessel or taken in vessel. And she says just two words and seven candlesticks had all that. And that's less than 5% of what's possible with that phrase. John turned to see seven candlesticks or just seven candlesticks by itself or the word seven candlesticks without the number also comes out to Inky Vessel Stand, whatever that means. So that's awesome. I'm just blown away by that, man. Seriously, that's like, I mean, yeah, so what? Yeah, embrace the inner nerddom. That's what we do here. That's what we do on this broadcast. I thought everybody knew that. We embrace the inner nerddom here. We don't suppress the nerddom. We embrace the nerddom. Everything I do is based around being a nerd. I mean, if you have any illusions about that, I hate to let the air out of your bubble, but I'm a fucking nerd. I always have been. But now the nerds are taking over, see? And not Bill Gates either. He's not a real nerd. He's a sellout nerd. He's a porch nerd, right? He's an Uncle Tom nerd. Yeah. Oh, man. I could go in on that all night. It's great. Let's see what else we have here from the, I'm hung up on that. Anagram woman, we shall call you. You are the master. Never let anybody say that you are not an anagram master because you are. It's rad. Nerdness is good. And especially if you're female, it's even all the better. I mean, goodness, there's plenty of us, male unit nerds out here, but the female unit nerds, those are the best. Let's see what else we have. I would be interested in your opinion. This is from VK. In your opinion on Michael Cremo. I don't really have a really that deep of an opinion about Michael Cremo other than. And I could be completely off the mark on this. The guy could, you know, maybe some of you out there have, you know, information on him saying he's suspect or whatever else. I don't. I've never come across anything. I've come across some of his readings. I think I've heard some of his interviews on Red Eyes. And come across quite a bit of his work many times. And he's been on Ancient Aliens and stuff like that. I have to say that what I've seen of his work, I haven't ever seen anything of what I've seen of his work that I could say I really disagreed with. I'm sure there might be, but I don't really have a lot of information. I would say that I don't think he's bad. I don't have anything against him, and I have no, I've never seen any evidence of him. You know, maybe he is. I mean, but if that's why you're asking, if I think he's a plan or a spook or a disinfo art or something like that, you know, my answer is I don't know. I couldn't tell you. Very well, he could be, but I've never seen that. And again, what I have seen of his work, I quite liked, to be honest with you. I didn't see any of his work that I disagree with. That was very interesting. Thought some of it was right on with some of the other stuff I've researched. So, you know, take that for what you will. If I had anything negative to say about him, bet your sweet ass I'd say it. But I don't. So let's see what else we got here. Illuminati Hobbies, another one from VK. Illuminati Hobby besides horse breeding. I talked about that last night. Another Illuminati bloodline hobby besides horse breeding and yachting is big game hunting. GoDaddy.com founder criticized by PETA for elephant hunting video. Oh, yeah. Well, those, you know, and they also hunt humans, too. The greatest, you know, the most dangerous hunt and all that stuff. Yeah, they really do that shit. Here's one from someone named Troy. NASA Jet Propulsion Laboratory is using Comet Elenin as a cover story among many for this real group of objects closest to Earth in September to November 2011. Lots of disinfo about this event. Chemtrails are to absorb radiation from the dwarf star, the Black Sun. Radiation from Japan, radiation meme, also used to cover the incoming radiation. Yeah, I talked about that last night. Please review these vids, Invisible Sun. Okay. Cool. I will definitely check it out. Let's see what else we have here. I think that's all the email we have for tonight, so. There you go. Thanks to all our people who sent in emails. I'm glad that you guys are participating and glad I could get into some of that stuff. Let's carry on tonight with chapter 14 out of William Bramley's The Gods of Eden, chapter 14, the Plagues of Justinian. As we leave the time of Jesus and enter the AD years, history becomes firmer and personalities come into better focus. Documentation is better. Even so, the same historical patterns we have studied continue undiminished. To those who find what we have looked at thus, To those who find what we've looked at thus far completely unbelievable, I can only share that feeling with full empathy. The view of history I am presenting seems to demand an understanding that the factors which lie at the bottom of human turmoil may be extremely bizarre factors. Perhaps that is why they have never been resolved. I would agree with that 100%. 100% I would agree with that statement. The factors which lie at the bottom of human turmoil may be extremely bizarre factors. Yeah, they are. I'll tell you that. That's one thing I can tell you with all certainty. I may not be able to define, and none of us can. Nobody out there can yet. We just don't have all the information. So none of us can really clearly define what is controlling and running this whole thing. But you know what? We have enough evidence, and I think just about any researcher out there, unless they were a complete priest-class minion, you'd be hard-pressed to find too many researchers who wouldn't agree with the fact that they found in their own research, with whatever topics it may be, that there is something a lot more sinister and a lot more dark and a lot more negative and nasty than just, you know, this easy explanation of Jews and bankers and, you know, priests and pedophiles and all this stuff. You understand what I mean? I mean, I don't think I've ever come across a researcher that I ever met or talked to that hadn't said that yeah, you know, we know this much, we know up to this point, but there definitely is something darker and more sinister that's really running this whole show. What that is and what it entails, none of us really know at this point. You know, it really is just the way it is. That is exactly a great way of describing it. So, after the lifetime of Jesus, the Christian church grew rapidly. In its early years, Christianity attracted a large number of genuine humanitarians who were enthused by the message Jesus tried to put forth. Early Christian leaders, despite the Essene influence, were able to promote a rather benign religion with many benefits. Jesus had not failed entirely. Early Christians gave people the hope that they could achieve spiritual salvation by acquiring knowledge and by engaging in ethical conduct, by unburdening themselves through a confession of wrongdoing, and by making amends for those transgressions which caused a person to suffer guilt. Given the benign character of the early Christian church, it did not need a harsh code of ethics. The severest punishment a person could suffer in most Christian sects at that time was excommunication, i.e. being kicked out. That was considered a very severe punishment. However, because an individual was considered doomed to eternal spiritual deterioration if he or she was excommunicated, a priest was obliged to do everything he could to appeal to a person's reason before excommunicating him. The primary cause for excommunication was criminal or grossly immoral behavior. For about the first 300 years of its existence, Christianity remained an unofficial religion and was often persecuted. A number of political leaders eventually became converts, and under them, Christianity began to change. The humanitarian foundation created by Jesus eroded as Christianity became more political. The political transformation of Christianity got its first big push in the West, in the West Roman Empire, with the Christian conversion of its ruler, Constantine I the Great. A number of historians believe that Constantine was already leaning in the direction of becoming a Christian because his father was a monotheist. Contemporaries of Constantine have noted, however, that Constantine's true conversion came as a result of a reported vision he had in 312 AD. Several different accounts have been recorded of that vision, according to Socrates, who wrote about it, in the 5th century AD. And he was marching at the head of his troops. A paternal vision transcending all description appeared to him. In fact, at about that time of the day, when the sun, having passed the meridian, began to decline toward the west, he saw a pillar of light in the form of a cross on which was inscribed, "In this conquer." Boom, bingo, zip, zam, zip. Bingo, motherfucker. That right there, that moment right there, and to see Bramley tie that in with the custodials, the custodial rulers, oh, that's key. Oh, that's really key. Key piece of info right there. Yes, in this sign conquer. That is the moment. That is the genesis. That is when religion was combined with the priest class and combined with genocide and murder and bloodshed and the temple and then the Templars and of course the Crusades, on and on and on after that, and then into the modern day of what we have now with those forefathers that that originated from that are now in the Council for National Policy and now in the Jesuit Order. You see how this has happened? That's why Blackwater's over there calling their Humvees and all that stuff the Templar One and the Templar Two and all this stuff. It's unbelievable. That's a key moment in history right there, folks. We need to be paying attention to this. In this sign, conquer. That's when you started to see, the appearance of the cross, that is the meaning it took from that point on. And people who wear the crosses and whatnot, they wear them because they are agents of that original particular mindset. And it's the people in these bloodlines, these ones that were put in positions of power by the custodians to be the rulers over earth, the ones that were the original priest class. These are the ones that executed every plan and have created history all around us. They've been there at every major event throughout history. And they were all over the assassination of Lincoln and also all over the assassination of John F. Kennedy. And guess what, Bubba? That's why I'm asking. That's why I've been asking everybody to support us these past few months so I could get this movie done the way I want it to be, because all that's going to be in the new film. We got fingerprints all over it. Man, reading this, tell you what. In the West, he saw a pillar of light in the form of a cross, and down in a pillar of light in the form of a cross. That's very interesting because in the Dominican Republic, this is absolutely true. You can look this up. In the Dominican Republic, the Knights of Malta, the Sovereign Military Order of Malta, paid for a building to be constructed down there. It's called the Faro Acolan. Faro Acolan. Faro A-C-O-L-O-N. Faro Acolan. It is a cross-shaped building with no windows. The Sovereign Military Order of Malta paid for it to be constructed there in the Dominican Republic. The locals talk about hearing screams and blood sacrifice being done inside. And at night, guess what it does? It emits a pillar of light into the sky in the form of a cross. And when I saw this thing, I was like, aliens built that thing. Aliens built that thing. That was, I don't know why, and I had no proof of that and still don't, but when I first saw that, the Pharaoh colon, my immediate thing was that was built by extraterrestrials. There's just no way it isn't. And so reading this now, it's sort of just unbelievable that, you know, that especially when you think about the fact that the Knights of Malta paid for this thing to be created. I mean, this thing is saying, I'm dropping some pictures into the chat room for you. For those of you who haven't ever seen this thing, it's just an unbelievable sight. So again, yeah, for that to be, yeah. Wow. Let's continue on here. The pillar of light thing. Yeah, that just got me. So he saw a pillar of light in the form of a cross on which was inscribed, "In this sign, conquer." The appearance of the sign struck him with amazement, and doubting his own eyes, he asked those around him if they could see what he did. And as they unanimously declared that they could, the emperor's mind was strengthened by this divine and miraculous apparition. On the following night, while he slept, he saw Christ, who directed him to make a standard flag according to the pattern he had been shown and to use it against his enemies as a guarantee of victory. Obedient to the divine command, he had a standard made in the form of a cross, which is preserved in the palace until this day, right there. The sign of Rome was put on the flag as a sign of conquering. And that's what it's been meant to do, to conquer the other bloodlines that were spread out throughout the planet, to conquer them so that only the white Anglo-Saxon, the whites that were put in positions of kingship, will rule the planet and allowing them to do away with everybody else. This is where eugenics and the CMP and the white nationalists and all that stuff come into to play. This is why, you know, who knows the most about this Anunnaki stuff and all this? You know who knows the most of that? Go look at like websites like Stormfront, the neo-Nazis. They know about this Seven Ways to Sunday. I've looked in their forums before. They know all about the Anunnaki. They know about all this stuff because they believe that that's what proves the whole idea of the Aryan race. They know all about this stuff, man. And then these guys will go on radio shows and go, "Oh, yeah, I don't talk about that Anunnaki stuff. That's crap." Yeah, right. Knowing you know full well about it, you little white supremacist turds. Let's see where I left off here. The truth of Constantine's vision is disputed by those who would attribute it to mere legend making. Others might make the view of the aerial cross as an unusual reflection of the setting sun, followed by a dream. Some theorists might even argue that it was another manifestation of the UFO phenomenon with its continuing links to apocalyptic religion. Whatever the truth of the story is, Constantine's purported vision of a bright light in the sky, followed by the appearance of Jesus the next night, is stated to be the event which pushed Constantine into the arms of apocalyptic Christianity. He issued the famous Edict of Milan 1 year later. The edict officially granted tolerance to the Christian religion within the Roman Empire, ending the almost three centuries of Roman persecution. Constantine was responsible for other significant changes to Christianity. It was he who convened and often attended the Council of Nicaea in 325 AD. At that time, many Christians, such as the Gnostics, strongly resisted efforts by Constantine and others to deify Jesus. The Gnostics simply saw Jesus as an honest spiritual teacher. The Nicene Council met in large part to put an end to such resistance and to create divine images of Jesus. With this purpose in mind, the council created the famous Nicene Creed, which made belief in Jesus as the Son of God a cornerstone of Christian faith. To enforce these often unpopular tenets, Constantine put the power of the state at the disposal of the newly Romanized Christian church. Constantine's reign was notable for another achievement. It marked the beginning of the European Middle Ages. Constantine is credited with laying the foundation for medieval serfdom and feudalism that they are reinitiating right now as we speak. As in the Hindu caste system, Constantine made most occupations hereditary. He decreed that the colony, a class of tenant fanners, were to be permanently attached to the soil on which they lived. Constantine Romanized Christianity. Yeah, somebody in my chat room the other day was saying, I think it was Eric, Electrophrenic. He was saying, oh yeah, you know, Ted Turner, he may not be a bad guy after all. I saw him on TV the other day, and he has all these cattle farms and these horse farms. He owns all this land. Yeah, he owns an ungodly amount of land. He owns a stretch of land that starts at fucking the Mexico border and goes all the way up to Montana to the Canadian border. He said he bought all that so he could ride his horse from one border to the other on and still be on his own land. Unbelievable, that guy. And so he was saying, you know, oh, maybe he's not a bad guy after all. He's paying these farmers to, you know, live on his land and take care of his horses and cattle and stuff. And I go, you understand that's feudalism, right? That's the definition of feudalism. That's the definition of serfdom. When you live on land that you don't own, yet you take care of it and raise it and everything else for somebody else's benefit, that's serfdom. And it goes back to, you know, the purveyors of this modern world system. And his oppressive feudalism caused Christianity to move sharply away from the surviving maverick teachings of Jesus into a nearly complete custodial system. Exactly. When it got Romanized, when the Romans came in and took Christianity and turned it from a maverick renegade teaching that was for the people, they took Christianity, co-opted it, and turned it into this priest class custodial creation that we know of today. That's what modern-day Christianity is. As time progressed and official changes to Christian doctrine continued to be made, two new crimes emerged: heresy, speaking out against established dogma, and paganism, not adhering to Christianity at all. Even though, you know, yeah, that was prior to ever being created, there was paganism, and it stole so many things from us. We don't want to talk about that. We'll talk about that more around Easter. In the earliest days of the church, Christian leaders felt that people could only be made Christians by appealing to their reason and that no one could be or should be forced. After Constantine, leaders of the new Roman orthodoxies took an entirely different view. They demanded obedience as a matter of law and belief on the basis of faith alone rather than reason. With those changes came new punishments. No longer was excommunication the severest penalty of the church, although it was still practiced. Physical and economic sanctions were also applied. Many devoted Christians became victimized by the new laws when they would not agree to the new Roman orthodoxies. Those victims correctly saw that the church was moving away from Jesus' true teachings. The new Christian teachings were given a great boost at the end of the 4th century AD by East Roman Emperor Theodosius L. Theodosius. Theodosius I, Theodosius issued at least 18 laws aimed at punishing those people who rejected the doctrines established by the Nicene Council. He made Christianity the official state religion and closed down many pagan temples by force. He ordered Christian armies to burn down the famous Alexandrian Library, which was a world book depository and center of learning. The Alexandrian Library contained priceless historical, scientific, and literary records from all over the world gathered over a period of 700 years. Although some of the library had already been ravaged by earlier wars, the destruction of Theodosius' army obliterated what remained. Because most of the documents were one of a kind, a great deal of recorded history and learning was lost. Matters continued to worsen. By the middle of the 6th century AD, the death penalty came to be used against heretics and pagans. A campaign of genocide was ordered by the East Roman Emperor Justinian to more quickly establish the Christian orthodoxies. In Byzantine alone, an estimated 100,000 people were murdered. Again, as soon as these Romans came in, as soon as they came in and took it over, this is what you started to see. You started to see it become the priest class that it is today. That got passed down and these bastards started initiating bloodshed and genocide immediately. And everybody out there that calls himself Christian, maybe even some of you out there in our listening audience, it just seemed to not understand that and get that and understand that when those of us try to expose Christianity and what it is today, that this is why. Not that we're against the teachings of Jesus, not that we don't think that those teachings, even though it may be from a person that never existed, aren't good core teachings, some of them, and blah, blah, and this, that, and the other. We just don't know. We don't have all the information. I've said this for the longest time. I don't think we have enough information to say we should believe in Jesus or shouldn't believe in Jesus. Because honestly, we just don't have enough information. We don't know everything he believed. We don't know everything he taught. We haven't been given that. We just don't have all the information. So I think it's foolish to one way or the other say, I believe that this person is the Messiah. But you shouldn't believe in any messiahs anyway. You should believe that Jesus and God and all the energies in the universe are something that all of us are a part of. And there is no separation between any of us. You come across very few universal truths, but I believe that is one. Under Justinian, the hunting of heretics became a frequent activity, and the practice of burning heretics at the stake began. Justinian also introduced more changes to Christian doctrine. He convened the Second Synod of Constantinople in 553 AD, and the synod was neither attended nor apparently sanctioned by the Pope in Rome. At that time, in fact, many of the changes to Christian doctrine in the Eastern Roman Empire had not yet reached the papacy, although they eventually would. The Second Synod issued a decree banning the doctrine of past lifetimes or reincarnation, even though the doctrine was important. It was an important one to Jesus. There you go again. Bloodshed, restricting of knowledge, priest class, Rome. All roads, ladies and gentlemen, lead to Rome. All roads lead to Rome. There's another one for your anagram machine. Nerd out on that one for a while. Oh my God, I bet that's a laundry list. It's true, though. All roads lead to Rome. In all research, no matter what the topic is, no matter where it goes, no matter what it is, it all roads always lead to Rome. All roads lead to Rome every time. Every time. That's why. Everything in our world that we can, that we even see as problems can be originated back to these events that we're talking about right here. Can you see that? It's true. It was all over for us once this stuff that we're talking about right now came in. If anyone assert the fabulous preexistence of souls and shall submit to the monstrous doctrine that follows from it, let him be excommunicated. In deference to that decree, all but very veiled references to preexistence were taken out of the Bible. Belief in preexistence was declared heresy. This suppression was enforced throughout the Western Christian world and in its sciences. The idea of personal preexistence still remains to a very large degree a Western religious and scientific heresy. Christianity was shaped into a powerful institution under the East Roman emperors. True to the pattern of history, Romanized Christianity was another brotherhood faction that could be counted on to do battle with other brotherhood factions, thereby helping to generate nonstop warfare between human beings. Another perfect way of putting it. The new Orthodox Christianity was placed in opposition to all other religions, including the East Roman mystery schools, which Justinian banned. We have just observed a snowballing of historical events triggered by Constantine's vision. This period marked one of mankind's end-of-the-world episodes, highlighted by religious visions, cataclysmic genocides, and the creation of a new world social order, promising but not delivering a utopia. Another important end-of-the-world element was also present. A massive plague struck, accompanied by reports of unusual aerial phenomena. Between 540 AD and 592 AD, let me stop right there for a minute. By the way, a lot of people believe that what they're talking about there when this straight plague, because there was mass UFO sightings around the time of the Great Plague, and a lot of people believe that was genocide, and that was depopulation programs being conducted by extraterrestrials because of the sights and, you know, unusual lights in the skies and stuff like that. It's very plausible. A lot of people believe that's what the chemtrails are. And why, even with certain zoom cameras, you can't always see a plane. You can just see a trail. It's true. Between 540 AD and 592 AD, when Justinian was carrying out his Christian reforms, a bubonic plague engulfed the East Roman Empire and spread to Europe. The epidemic began just inside Justinian's realm, and so it was named Justinian's Plague. Justinian's Plague was one of the most devastating plagues of history, and many people at the time believed it to be punishment from God. In fact, the word plague comes from the Latin word for blow or wound. Plague has been nicknamed God's disease or a blow or a wound from God. One reason people thought plague to be from God was the frequent appearance of unusual aerial phenomena in conjunction with outbreaks of the plague. One chronicler of Justinian plagues was the famous historian Gregory of Tours, who documented a number of unusual events from the plague years. Gregory reports that just before Justinian's plague invaded the region of France in 567 AD, three or four brilliant lights appeared around the sun in the heavens and appeared to be on fire. This may have been a natural sundog effect. However, other unusual celestial phenomena were also seen in the area. Another historian reported a similar event 23 years later in another part of France, Avignon. Strange signs were reported in the city and around the ground and was sometimes as brightly illuminated as the night as in the day. Shortly thereafter, a disastrous outbreak of the plague occurred here. Gregory reported a sighting in Rome consisting of an immense dragon which floated through the sky and down the city and down to the sea, followed by a severe outbreak of the plague immediately thereafter. Such reports chillingly suggest the unthinkable. But Justinian's plague was caused by biological warfare agents spread by custodial aircraft. It would be a repetition of similar plagues reported in the Bible and ancient Mesopotamian texts. By the time of Justinian's plagues, however, the custodians were invisible. That's when they took on the name of the Watchers. They were hidden behind brotherhood secrecy and veils of religious myth, yet they were apparently no less concerned about keeping their slave race oppressed. And they're, in my opinion, with the people that are in charge today, are the progenitors of that. We will see a great deal more evidence of UFO activity associated with plagues in the up-and-coming chapter on the Black Death. According to apocalyptic prophecy, an event like Justinian's plague is supposed to herald the coming of a new Messiah or a messenger from God. Sure enough, such a figure did arrive. His name was Muhammad. He was born during Justinian's reign at a time when the plague was still raging. Proclaimed in adulthood as the new savior, Muhammad became the leader of a new monotheistic apocalyptic religion, Islam. Like Moses and Jesus before him, Muhammad appears to have been a sincere man, but his new religion nevertheless became a faction which created new religious issues for people to endlessly fight over. Like Moses and Jesus, Muhammad was supported by the corrupted brotherhood. That's the end of chapter 14. The next chapter is entitled Muhammad, of course, obviously, and so we'll be getting into that in our next broadcast. Chapter 15, Muhammad, in the next broadcast, out of William Bramley's The Gods of Eden. And, again, more great information there tonight, and wow, you know, lots of little tidbits, lots to chew on. I hope you'll go back and maybe go back and read this on your own, read that chapter on your own. Again, there's lots to digest in there. Or go back and listen to my reading again. I appreciate everybody's comments. Everybody's been enjoying the book reading, and I'm glad you guys have. And it's definitely enjoyable for me because then I don't have to read so much of this ridiculous goddamn news. And that is indeed what it is. Please support our work, folks. This has been our fundraising week. Again, we just had a couple of people and like making donations this week, but those people need help, and we need all the support we can get right now. TheGlobalReality.com. Use the donate button there, or use the chipping banner, either one. And help us out if you can. My name is Josh Reeves. I love each and every one of you. And we'll see you next time for the broadcast. You guys have a great night. Take care.